Hello, welcome. My name is Thomas Steininger. I welcome you to Radio Evolve, our bi-weekly global webcast for consciousness and culture. Today, we have two guests in our broadcast, Terry O'Fallon, and do we have Tim here? What?
I hope so. Thank you.
I see myself here. Do you see me?
I can hear you. Hi, Kim Parter. Great.
Hi, Thomas. Nice to be here with you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining this program. I'm very excited to talk with you about a very simple question. The question is, what does it mean to be adult? What does it mean to be an adult person? It seems a very simple question. Both of you, I found, are highly qualified to talk about this. Terry, you are working since many years, since over 40 years, in research for adult development, and you developed your own stage model in the context of integral theory and in the context also of the work of Susanne Kuck-Reuter, who used to be your mentor. And Kim, you are an established international renowned therapist who is working with this model that Terry developed. And both of you are giving, since I think 8 years or so, seminars around the world about adult development. And tell me, both of you, what does it mean to be an adult? Before we talk about adult development, does it mean to be an adult human being? What is the difference between childhood development and adult development? Who are we talking when we are talking about adult people?
Well, I could begin by affirming that from the day we're born, we start growing up. And we have different kinds of ways of looking at how people grow up. So children usually can look at growing up as, their body gets bigger, they get taller, they start to talk, they have all these physical characteristics that help them grow up. But when we get to be more at the adult levels, it's not just the body that grows, it is also how we take perspectives. What is our worldview? Mm-hmm. So that to me is one of the primary demarcations that I use when I'm thinking about adult development. So, and I know Kim has some wonderful things to say about this as well.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. So we can look at adult development, like Terry said, we can watch our bodies grow up, but what about our inner beings? How does that grow up? And we can take a look at how we grow up physically. We can look at how we grow up intellectually. We can talk about how we grow up emotionally. And we can talk about how we grow up socially. And a lot of times in especially Western culture, we grow up physically and we might even grow up intellectually, but we're not necessarily growing up very well emotionally or even emotionally and socially. And that's one of the things I love about what your work is about, Thomas, is this deep emotional connectivity that happens in community. That's about really growing up in a whole manner, not just a partial manner.
Mm-hmm. There's one word I wrote down, Terry, when you were talking. You mentioned the word taking perspectives as something that's related to growing up as an adult person. That, I think, is not necessarily easy to understand. What does it mean to take perspectives? I think that's an interesting road in maybe, but talking how we develop not only physically with our bodies, but also with our inside worlds.
Well, Thomas, even children take perspectives, but usually as we grow up, we take wider and wider perspectives. And usually I would say that the early part of the third person perspective or the later part of the second person perspective, crossover is a good time to start thinking and look more deeply into what we really mean when we are talking about adult and adult behavior.
Can you explain
adult being in the world, but a perspective? Yes.
Okay. Can I ask you when you're talking about a third person perspective or second person perspective?
Yes.
What is that?
Well, a second person perspective is a perspective where you can look at somebody else and see that they're seeing you back. And this affects the way that you behave. It's the first time we really get involved in community. And you see that somebody is seeing you back physically, and you notice that they're looking at you. And because they're looking at you, you want to please them. So you want to pay attention to how you look, how you behave around other people that are in your own little community. So that's the simplest way I can think of to tell you about that. And eventually, you, instead of conforming to just how other people think about you, you start developing principles. And those principles, one of the famous principles that most of us are familiar with are like the Ten Commandments. And even if people don't like the way that you are, if you stay within those principles that you adopt at whatever set of principles you have, that generally is, the primary way of looking at this. And we call it a conformist perspective, a conformist late second person perspective. Does that help you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, what you're saying about a conformist and the relationship between being a conformist, meaning that I relate to a certain set of principles. And it's not necessarily, as I understand you, so important which kind of principles I relate to, but there's something that really holds my life, and holding up this principle seems to be a very important relationship to life that is this kind of conformist stage of development. Is it the right way to understand what you're saying?
Yes, and it's very important because you build the whole rest of your life based on some very basic kinds of principles that are important to us. And of course, you can have principles that aren't so good too. So we do have some communities that have principles that aren't good. I mean, we may not think of them as good. So people do select principles that they want to abide by, and they conform to those principles, and they try to find a community. Those same principles have been conformed to a set of principles, and everybody had to behave that way if they were going to be involved in that. That may not be the kind of
The younger generation in many ways has a great opportunity for engaging in self-authorship because they get to see so many experiences outside of the norm. And when you live in a bubble of norms, like a rural community that doesn't have access to the internet, like before the internet and before computers, that's all there was. So you didn't have enough surface area to experience other cultures, other peoples, other values. But now in this modern world, our kids have much more access to all that. So they're developing new types of norms that are more inclusive in many ways. And I think it sets them up for a better opportunity for moving into third-person perspective earlier and developing self-authorship because they're seeing different ways that people can be human.
Kim, can you hear me?
Yes.
First, thank you very much that you keep on the conversation as you did, because I had a complete system breakdown on my end.
I saw that.
I had to come in again, but I heard you speaking, and we are still alive and we are online. And I would like to connect with the very thing that you said in the end right now, how the kids come in a completely different world right now, where they've find these different perspectives much more easily available, and how this changes our development. Can you say a little more about this?
Well, yeah, I think that because of it, development usually occurs because we have exposure to new information. If you just have the old information, you're floundering in the dark in terms of development. But if you are presented with new information that is a perspective shift, then you can move into that much more easily. Just like if you have a coach that teaches you about how to play soccer or play football or anything, they introduce you to new ideas and new techniques that makes you better at your sport. And if you have a good professor, that helps you become better at your field of intellectual pursuits. The same thing with perspectives. When you have this surface area, you have this contact area, this is what helps people grow. Mm-hmm. And the modern society has so much surface area of cross-cultural connections, even kids just playing games or playing games with people from different cultures and different worldviews now. So they're being exposed to these different cultures at a much earlier age. And I think that sets them up for these later perspectives to happen more in flow, more naturally.
So do I understand you right that you think that we grow up faster than we used to because we are exposed to more diversity and to a multiplicity of perspectives in a way we never used to? And this allows us to hold the complexity of views, and we are forced to do that. And somehow that this kind of global internet-related multi-perspective society forces us to grow up in a new way that we haven't seen before?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it does. I think that everything has a beauty and everything has a consequence to it. So I think we are growing up into these higher perspectives, but sometimes that's being done at the cost of developing a little more robust, healthy stability at earlier developmental levels. Mm-hmm. I think we're gaining perspective, adult perspectives earlier, but we might have a little bit less stability. I'm not sure on that yet, but to some degree, it looks like that might be happening.
Mm-hmm. I would love to step in with a little bit of history here to give us an idea of whether or not we grow up faster and faster as we evolve in, as a human race, as a human species. If you look at, 50, 100,000 years ago, people didn't even develop to the second person perspective. They didn't have a set of principles. Then they moved in, it took 20, 30,000 years or so for people to move into, a second person perspective. Then the first person perspective didn't take quite as long because they had people around them that moved into the second person perspective. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing that evolution today, but it's sped up now. It speeds up so much faster when people can get themselves through the first, second, third. Now there are fourth, fifth, and sixth person perspectives, and they're happening faster and faster because we have a plethora of people in our culture today who have a variety of these perspectives, and we bump into them all the time. And because of that, we have the opportunity to grow up being around other people that have these wider, deeper, mature or not so mature perspectives. And we don't have to figure it out all by ourselves. And this is one of the benefits of having these kinds of dialogues that you're sponsoring in your radio shows, Thomas, is that you offer these kinds of beautiful conversations that people can listen to, and it wakes us up to more of what's possible for us to understand today.
Yeah, I would like to ask you, though, both of you, a very uninformed question, because I think I understand what you're trying to describe, how the complexity of our society, the complexity of our time, both forces us and allows us to develop many more perspectives that we were able to hold before. At the same time, and this may sound very naive, but I would like to ask you that anyway, there are people who are less exposed to this hyper-information time that we are in, people that may live more in rural lives, or even people in countries that are not so exposed to this postmodern multimedia society. And sometimes I experience there a kind of human maturity that I value very much, and where I sometimes feel, or at least I have the question, by all these developments that you're describing, are we also losing something? Is the speed of the multi-perspectivity, the different perspectives that we learn, the way we are exposed to all of this, are only a gain, or is there something also endangered here? I know this is developmentally very uninformed, but I would like to ask this quite naive question because I really have it. Sometimes I see people who are not exposed to all of what you're describing, but I see someone, or at least I think I see someone who is a very, in my words, mature human being.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Thomas. I have been in some of those villages myself, and you see the shining eyes. You see people that don't have telephones, that don't have televisions, that don't have communications. Mm-hmm. They have their own little village, and yet they have a purity of heart and innocence that is absolutely exquisite. As they grow up, they develop their principles. They live by their principles, and this is one of the things that Kim and I are very strong about. We know so little about the full richness of each developmental level. Mm. And when we, the one thing about the stages model is that we have a kind of a fenced off area that allows a full robustness. And because we like to do research, and I'm a researcher, so I fall in this particular kind of category, we tend to put categories together, and once the categories are there, we start labeling people as, oh, you're at this person perspective, oh, this is how you behave when you're here, and when you're not here, you behave in this person perspective. But what oftentimes happens is that these are researcher and individual social construction of reality. They affect the beliefs that we have about what a developmental level is like. And you can be in a conformist developmental level and have a richness that is so stunning that most of us don't even recognize it as being the best of the perspective that is possible, because we speed through it so quickly. So there are positive things about developing quickly, and then there are some real downsides to that too. You know, and I know, all of us who have had children who are grandchildren, etc. We understand from that experience really helps us understand the full, more of the robustness of who we are, regardless of what stage we're at. But I've scored people at very late developmental levels, but they don't have the same experience that people who have been through many disorienting dilemmas and have had to grapple with the with life in a way that gives you a softness, a beauty, an acceptance that you don't necessarily, you may not have when you're a little earlier, that you don't, when you don't have all of these beautiful experiences to kind of hack off the rough edges that that we all tend to have.
No, I agree. But the way you're focusing it, or the way I hear you, is very much the pure heart, and that's definitely something that I also experienced, and that I also meant. But I do mean more. I also mean something that is called wisdom. And where there are people who are, again, in conformist state and are very traditional and live in this kind of traditional context, but there's a form of life wisdom that I very much appreciate. And it's not just that they're pure, that's maybe part of it, but there's also something that they have a wisdom of life. Is that something that in your model you can relate to, or is that something that is part of this development? How would you see this? Whoever, both of you, wants to answer this question.
Kim, well, why Thomas, don't you?
Okay, thank you. So, Thomas, what you're referring to here, I think, is how I mentioned it earlier. I said we're growing up, but as a result, we're not, maybe not as robust or as stable at each developmental level. Mm-hmm. And so just coming back to that point that, yes, the developing height at an earlier age is going to give us perspectives that we're going to need to solve the problems that are happening in society, but we're also limiting or creating problems. And one of the things is a reduced internal locus of control. With all the external gadgets and everything, everything becomes external to us. Even our memory is external to us. That never used to be. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about life wisdom, it's about settling in and having a full, robust understanding of ourselves, of the world around us, and that deep wisdom of the internal and the external meeting in real life and coming into a unity with each other, I think is that wisdom that you're speaking to, and it's a very important thing, and it's something that I think we're losing as we move faster into higher perspectives that is really important. If you look at the research on stable agrarian cultures, they lead to the most happy, rich, healthy people around, and you look at the modern world today where addictions are rampant. We have chemical addictions. We have video addictions. We have all kinds of addictions. And these addictions are an example of external locus of control and inability to hold the wisdom that occurs when you are able to bring your consciousness into an internal world and hold an internal locus of control. And it's that internal locus of control that allows you to be stable even in the face of difficulty, to see wisdom and capacities even when the external world is bouncing around you. And I think it's that type of wisdom that we are perhaps losing while we're gaining the height perspectives.
Nonetheless, in the stages model, we really look at this very thing that you're talking about, Kim. And so we have a space, and we see that a lot of times in a stage just has a tiny little central point in that space that is filled up, and there's a whole lot of space there that isn't. And that space that isn't is often the wisdom space. And so in our work, we try to help people fill the whole space up that can have the unity between the interior and the exterior, and that can have, that internal locus of control as well as the exterior. And we look at a number of different areas to determine what that's like and whether or not there is a robustness and a health all the way through. And our work really is pretty much around being healthy and robust where you're at, rather than to try and hurry on to a later developmental level.
So, this question that I ask for this webcast really is, what does it mean to be an adult? I hear you saying two things. One is how our society really both forces us and encourages us to really be exposed to a multitude of different perspectives that allows us to see things not just from my first person, my ego point of view, that allows to see this not just from a conformist point of view, from principles, but there are different viewpoints coming in that allow me to have a broader view. At the same time, what I try to kind of investigate with the two of you a little bit is, it seems that there is also the tendency to lose something while we are developing. How can we integrate what we need to really hold in this kind of modern technology, internet, global driven society, and at the same time develop this inner spaces that you also were hinting at, or this where wisdom comes from?
Well, I think what we need to do, Thomas, is create spaces for face-to-face and kinesthetic interactions. Everything's being done through the cell phone and almost by perspective or by action of going through the cell phone, we're moving things into an external locus of control. I do not have community unless I have an external device. And creating real community, face-to-face communities around us are really important, and being able to have face-to-face interactions and actual real touch and real connection and experiencing those types of social experiences are really important for that. And having stability, the research shows that if the family eats meals together, if you sit in the same place together, if you have show paid attention to while you're having dialogue at the table, that all leads to more stability and robustness. And we miss out on that with this busy society sometimes. So one of the real things that I see happening in our modern youth is that we're seeing a similar thing happen with consciousness that we're seeing happening with money. We're seeing mm-hmm. a huge gap in the money, and you have the 1% that are super wealthy and the 99% that are relatively poor mm-hmm. with a few people scattered in between. And I'm seeing that in the consciousness now in the early developmental level or in the younger generation, as you see that the kids that have managed to use the technology in a way that doesn't control them, that they have that internal locus of control, that they're coming from heart, they're coming from soul, they're coming from depth, and the technology is just an accent to that. And those kids are the most amazing people I've ever met in my life. They're truly remarkable beings. And but you see a great number of kids that just don't have that self-control. They're being addicted to their phone. They're being addicted to the video games. They're being addicted to screen time. And they're losing internal locus of control, and they are becoming lost souls. And I'm just seeing a wide gap emerging in the youth of absolutely unbelievable wisdom that you would never expect, even in elderly people in many ways. But a vast majority that are getting lost in all this.
Let me pursue this a little further. I find it very fascinating, because I have similar experiences, and I hear people talking about similar experiences, but I'm sure I don't have such a deep understanding at all as you seem to have. You are describing that the younger generations that's growing up right now, there are two different phenomenons that you are finding here. One is that there is a kind of maturity and a groundedness and developments that you find very surprising. And you talk about a different part of this younger generation that where you see mostly a kind of lostness in. Can you describe both phenomenons and what you see there, what kind of development you see there, and what kind of a lack of development you see on the other hand?
Yeah. Terry, do you want to talk a little bit about this, or do you want me to?
I just want to hop in for a couple of minutes here and describe something very simple. I want to speak to the senses. So external locus of control, mm-hmm. often we're dealing with the visual and the auditory sense. Internal locus of control really starts coming from the heart. Of course, all of the senses interact. We forget the interior aspect of the body. And so as parents, it's really important to help children develop their visual capacities and become mature that way, to develop their listening and their auditory capacities. But when it comes to the kinesthetic, the heart, the soulful kind of aspects that children have, they're not probably going to get that quite so much in a video game as they would by having a physical connection with people. And so I just think it's really important to make sure that all three of the primary senses are, from the time babies are born, are very highly engaged and so that they can interact properly, and that we don't constantly see things either through our eyes or listening and have a little bit of an anemic response through the physicality of the body, and having the body as a whole instrument in our waking up and our growing up. Mm-hmm.
And I understand you're right that having this or not having this integration that you're just describing is part of the reason why there are different young generation growing up that sometimes has this integration, and in that develops higher forms of consciousness, higher integration, and it's it's this lacking of having all these different lines of development that creates this kind of lostness. Would you agree with Kim that there's this phenomenon of young people where you're very astonished how mature they are, and where you wonder where they get that from? It's more my experience, but I kind of heard it with Kim also saying this. There are some young people where you feel there's something new going on. And at the same time, it seems not just with young people, but with all of us, that we get lost in the media reality where we lose touch with our social, with our physical, and our inner development in a way that maybe is also scary.
Kim, what do you say?
I think he was directing that question to you. He was asking if you agree.
Oh, you know, I'm just thinking about, you know, all of the children who start getting computers when they're a year old, 2 years mm-hmm. old, and this sort of thing. And they spend hours and hours of time doing that instead of being robust and finding little friends and all of that mm-hmm. kind of thing. You know, these visual devices are wonderful for visual learning and for auditory learning, but it doesn't do much for the kinesthetic, you know. And so this is to me, it's a parenting process, a wisdom in our parenting that we don't even think about, you know. As Kim often says, you know, a mother is nursing the baby, but there she is, you know, playing with her thumb on her cell phone. And what kind of eye contact, what kind of kinesthetic processes are actually happening from the day of the birth of the baby? And this doesn't mean you shouldn't have a device. You just need to know what is the relationship you need to have with that and with the child as they're growing up. So one of the big areas that Kim and I work in is parenting, because it's it's important. It's just an important area for the youth and for the growing up. But Kim, you've got a lot of understanding here around all of this area of the people that you work with that are incredibly wise as young, and then those that aren't so much. So, and I'd love to hear more about what you have to say about that too.
Yeah, so what we see in our parenting and the children that are being raised in this parenting is we have parents that become very focused on external qualities. So in our commercial society, it seems like status is based upon external qualities, how pretty you are, how much money you have, so how many toys you can have, how many of these external things you can have. And so what happens in our parenting, in many parenting situations, is that we're really focusing on external qualities for social status versus internal qualities. And in rural communities where you live and grow up in the same place, internal qualities are a lot more important, who you are as a person. And so parents really emphasize growing up as a quality human being, not as a person who can show themselves very quickly and appear in high status very quickly, but what kind of a quality human being you're going to be. And you can't fake that in a closed community setting, because everybody knows who you are. And so you get feedback about who you are as an internal person, and that helps you to grow that internal world in a really beautiful, robust way. But in our society, you know, you have really how you gain status is by showing up externally in a very inauthentic way, by showing up and even in spiritual development, it's how spiritually developed can I appear to be to everybody versus how spiritually developed really am I? And so you see this externalizing of everything to gain status rather than the internal qualities of the human being. And that's what happens in this fast-paced, multi-media world is that you get a lot more positive feedback if you can put forth a good image versus if you can be a really good human being. And that seems to me to be the driving force that is emptying out the soul of modern humanity. But there are those children that are being raised, even in this modern society, by parents that really stress internal qualities versus external qualities and live them themselves. Like Terry said, if you're breastfeeding, are you staring at the eyes of your child and bonding, or are you staring at the phone, bonding to your phone, and now your child has no one to bond to? So it's developing these internal qualities, and there's no reason we can't do that in this modern society. It's just that we have to get over our addictions to the media and our addictions to the superficial commercialization of the human condition and really develop our inner worlds and emphasize that in our children, notice that in our children, appreciate that in our children. And then we will create remarkable human beings.
Mm-hmm. There's something... And what both of you are saying, it seems to me that you're really advocating for parenting, but I guess also for ourselves, that as we are developing in the society with this multiplicity of opportunities, of realities, of everything that opens up whole worlds through the media, mostly through electronic media, that this is in itself an opening, but it needs to be met with a kind of being rooted both in our physical reality, our body reality, our emotional reality, and our social reality in family life. There needs to be some kind of coming together of the vastness of our, I would say, the internet world, and a real being rooted in the basics of what it means to be human as a social being that lives on this earth, that has touch, that has feel, that has family, that has a body and a social community. That only if there's an integration of both, the new development really help us to grow up in a way that you were describing.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree. I would say that Kim and I were very fortunate in our own growing up. And it's easier perhaps for us to see it because we grew up on a farm and we didn't have all the technological aspects to grow up with because they weren't available in mm-hmm. our area. And so we had a very, conformist but beautiful community where we had all of that, balancing of the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, the interior and the exterior. They're all the parts of the human being affect every other part. And if one part is anemic, then that will affect every other part. And if one part is over muscle bound, that will also affect the rest of the parts of us as humans. So this balance is really an important aspect from the day that we're born. And I think Kim and I both had that as a great possibility just because of the place that we lived.
And not only community, but alone time. That was really important mm-hmm. too. And that's important in this modern society. There's almost never alone time. So people don't learn to sit with themselves and experience what it's like to be who they are. They only know themselves in the context of the video or in the context of other people that are doing cell phone interactions with them. And so being so available to community without having alone time keeps us away from taking time to explore that interior world. So creating real, honest community and also a comfortability with alone time so that I do that inner exploration, that balance is really important, I think, in being able to hold the distractions of the modern society and actually bring them into our function rather than us being co-opted by the technology itself. The technology then, if I have an internal sense of myself, a really robust internal sense of myself and a sense of community where I'm around, now the technology is a tool for my use. And it's not that I become the victim of the technology itself.
At the same time, you're just saying that technology is a great thing and it really helps us to open up to the world and to open up to kind of a dimensions of understanding of what it means to be human that we have not had before. Mm-hmm. And I really, listening to you, I gain an understanding. Still following the question, what does it mean today to be an adult? And I see how being an adult in one hand, is much more challenging than it ever used to be. Because if we use a stark picture kind of 500 years ago, where dealing with adulthood basically meant dealing with a local community and dealing with the values of that community, dealing with a strong understanding of traditional values and being able to cope with that world. There are different openings in our world process with modern and postmodern society that push us in a very different, much more open, much more free, much more fluid situation, and at the same time a situation that particularly in the last 30 years, but now in some ways also before, is more and more driven by technology that allows us to find completely new ways of understanding who we are, completely new ways to understand what it means to create a human society, but at the same time, there is a groundedness in all these capacities that both of you were describing that are just very basic humans. If they don't go together, we as a society get lost in what the technological process is producing with us. You use the word, we get co-opted. There's something where I feel that we need new capacities to not get co-opted by the technological process. Isn't that something that is these days more important than it ever used to be?
Yes, I would agree that there is. Yes. There are some people that are doing some interesting thing, ironically, with technology, using technology itself to help develop internal awarenesses. So you can get apps that'll help you notice your breathing, for example. You can put your cell phone on your belly, and every time you breathe, it'll help you balance your breathing so you start getting a little bit of development. So even though it's kind of a strange way of being external, it also is using the technology to learn a little bit about being internal. Mm-hmm. I think that we have focused our technology a lot on adrenaline rather than on peace and fulfillment. And if we can shift that technology to creating more peace and wonder and joy, that can help a little bit. But ultimately, we need to just come to a place of stepping outside of the technology, creating time to be outside of the technology so that we really get a sense of who we are. And then the technology can be used as a great tool to enhance our development, find place in the world, create amazing opportunities and growth and development, and bring our society to a more wise place.
Also, thinking about what we call integral consciousness, and I think now less about the theory of integral consciousness, but the integral consciousness as we experience it. Integral consciousness, people who really apply to be able to see the different layers of development, the different perspectives of our conscious capacity, the different lines, what it means to be human, tend quite often to have an understanding of what it means to be human that is very much held by an intellectual understanding of all these perspectives. But if what you are describing are inner qualities that hold these different intellectual capacities, but hold it in something that is much more intimate, that's much more intuitive, that's much more also heart-based. There seems to be also a development where holding this multiplicity must be also grounded in a very simple capacity of being present. Mm-hmm. Is it something that you would agree with?
Yes, the senses themselves grow up. We grow up from exterior seeing, exterior hearing, and exterior feeling, and then we grow into interior visualization, interior hearing. We talk to ourselves, and then interior emotions on a more of a concrete level. Those grow up into presence, into attunement, into witnessing. And then we grow up into, I am aware when I'm present and when I'm not. And then I am aware when I'm in attunement. I am aware when I'm being intuitive. I'm aware of when I'm witnessing. So these senses actually grow up from the concrete to the subtle to the very subtle. And our awareness is very much a part of all of that. But you drop, and there's many, multiple words that can describe these grown-up senses. But if you drop out all of the visual, you're going to have a different kind of process and understanding than you will if you are dropping out the auditory, or if your kinesthetic is anemic. All of these need to be highly developed in a legitimate way, and they all interact with one another. They've even done research to show that blind people, people blind from birth, actually develop images somehow in their heads as a result of their other senses. So the interior senses actually have quite a powerful process. And so this is why I like to ground things in a sensory capacities, because even if you're very spiritual, you can lose track of that and of one or of the other of those sorts of things. And yet the whole body is a spiritual being, not just the visual or the auditory or the timeless, spaceless aspect of things. There's more to it than that when it comes to the whole body experience and the interpenetration of self with other and self with everything.
I mean, you were describing your stages in a way where this capacity of this inner awareness is something that is crucial to move to an integral way of being in the world. Can you say more? How does this look like? What is this inner development that you see that helps us to ground this in the way that you were describing right now?
For one thing, it seems important to me, and I'm not sure everybody agrees with it, but to watch to see how the senses themselves develop. And if you see one of them being anemic, to that's part of the practice, is to engage in these various aspects. And of course, some of them are called lines, like the emotional line. But then there's a subtle energy that is a part of the exterior of the subtle aspects of the kinesthetic. So I like to just call it kinesthetic and be robust kinesthetically, be robust visually, both with the interior visualizations. For most of us, thought is actually visualizing and talking to ourselves. That's really when you just really get down to the nitty gritty, that's what representations are. And lots of people don't think about, oh, I'm visualizing, that's a form of thought. I'm talking to myself, that's a form of thought. And then you reflect on those things and have a metacognitive approach to all of that. But it's easy to do that and then leave out the kinesthetic, the body, the emotions. And if you pay close attention to your emotions, you may find that the things that's going on with your visualization and your hearing actually is a check that will stop you and say, this is the wrong way to go. This is this intuitive sense that you're talking about, Thomas. There is a body sense of things. Mm-hmm. And even in the scoring process that I have in the stages model, we start out with an analytic, a visual and an auditory analytic. But eventually, when people get good, they score with their whole body. It is a process of scoring with your whole body in order to really get the robustness of the person that you are scoring. And so developing this kind of a of an integrated being with the senses growing up through time. To me, that's one of the ways that you can start getting there. Then, of course, you learn to be aware of all of these things. And as you develop your awareness, it doesn't mean that you leave them all behind. Awareness is an absolutely critical aspect of all of this. Because it helps you form those sensory and those very subtle and very, very subtle sensory, that is the human apparatus, the beingness that makes us a human being, mm-hmm. is a combination of all of those and the awareness of that. And it helps us with the kinesthetic. We start getting a feeling about which way is an important part of our route here. If we hone that carefully, and we'll get reactions when we've got shadow material coming up, and then we know, something is amiss here. Mm-hmm. So the body tells us these things all the time if we but listen to it. And so I just think that it's a part of honing our body wisdom, and this is not a new topic. The thing is that it integrates with the visual and the auditory, and I know Kim has a lot of information about this that I'd love to hear about too.
Go ahead.
Maybe also as a question for you, Kim, because when listening to Terry, the question that arose in me was, so how does this apply to the conversation that we are having right now?
Yes. And so if you take a look at how, like Terry's talking about the internal visualization, we let's drill into biology and then move it back out again. So we have these neural networks that run throughout our body. And you know that if you exercise your muscle, it gets bigger and stronger. And we know that if we have external neurons that feel the external senses. And then we have this interoceptive neural network that develops later and alongside these. So those are what actually allow us to do internal visualization, internal auditory, internal kinesthetic. So if you don't spend time visualizing in your mind, if you don't spend time listening inside your head, if you don't spend time feeling inside your body, then these interoceptive neural networks don't develop. Mm-hmm. Now, if you practice anything over and over, what happens is you get a myelin sheath around within the neurons, and that makes the signals respond up to 1,000 times faster. So when you first pay attention to things that are inside, it takes a long time for the signal to actually create the neural network and to fire and have the experiences. But after you do this over and over and over, the myelin sheath grows and becomes slicker, smoother. And so now we can have these internal experiences quickly and efficiently and fast. And that actually makes us brighter, more intelligent, more capable people. And so now let's grow that up. If we want to do that as parents, we want to have that opportunity for our children to be truly bright and wise human beings. We want to give them time to do visualizations inside. We want to give them time to have internal audio and time to experience internal sensations. That means actually being with them, connecting with them, letting them be alone and having them do art and music and different things like that where they are in a creative space with that. Mm-hmm. Now let's grow that up a little bit more. Now that we have these interoceptive neural networks, these things are firing. They got the myelin sheaths around them. When we go out in community and society and with technology, we are so capable internally that we can use all these things as tools in an efficient way. We don't get lost because our interoceptive neural networks are solid. They're strong. They're buff. You know, they're muscle men for an internal type of experience. And so now we don't get lost. The addictions don't have an effect on us. We just don't get addicted because we don't need it. We've got something way better than that. And so what happens is we have the capacity to utilize our technology in skillful ways rather than being controlled by it. Now that I have all those skills, I can use that technology to reach across cultural boundaries, to create multicultural experiences that are healthy and robust for people and for whole communities and for whole nations and for the whole world. I can start really using the technology as a tool for creating a one world community. And just like what you're doing, Thomas, with this Evolve radio, which is a one world type of a perspective. It's these kinds of things that people can create because when we were children, we were given the capacity to create internal neural networks and let them grow up and be robust and have really slick myelin sheaths. And that allowed us to be able to use technology to create a better world. And therefore, this is what it leads to in terms of growing up as an adult. An adult is someone who has a very well-developed internal neural network with myelin sheaths that are running at 1,000 times the pace of what they would be if they were just barely developed, and at the same time is growing up to these larger perspectives that Terry talked about at the beginning of the program. And so now we have the marriage of the internal neural networks and the perspectives that are occurring because of the technology, and we have a real robust experience of now what it means to be an adult.
Mm-hmm. Let me try to see if I understand what you're saying. The way I try to do that is by really applying it to our conversation as we have. Mm-hmm. Because I can see that I can have this conversation with you, just being aware of a kind of a certain perspective that is my perspective that I really would like to bring into this conversation. And maybe to hear the information that comes from you, that there is a way where I try to establish a certain shared set of values with you that we talk from. But this internalization of experience that you're describing, the way I understand it, and I'm not sure if I'm completely wrong, but I find it very fascinating. To see that in this exchange of information that we have, and we come from very different places, you're very experienced in this theory that you're developing, and I hardly know enough about it. But it seems to me that these different understandings that you bring into the conversation, and the emphasis also how this has to be internalized by inner visualizations, opens up that we are holding something together where the perspective that you're bringing, the perspective that both of you are bringing, creates a shared room that is kind of held by these different perspectives. There are kind of visual senses to that. There's also kind of a sensomotoric sense of it. This dialogue space that we are holding has a certain feel to it, and I feel it with my body. This field, it also has an intellectual side to it because from my understanding, I put it into my understanding of a world space that I have to hold in my intellectual understanding to really contextualize what this conversation is about. But there seems to be a kind of a creativity and an intelligence that is trying to come together in this conversation that has not just a mental reality. It has a reality of an inner visual space. It has a reality of a felt dialogical space or relationship space that we are holding, and it's holding our understanding of the world. And it seems to be something that has an inner reality, and it looks very different to talk about this conversation by being aware of this. And when you were saying how we have to train this kind of inner senses, I could just feel if we really allow this kind of interior understanding of meeting spaces to be something that we are aware of, we become very sensitive and also very clear in our perception how these dialogical spaces that we are always engaged in create whole worlds all the time. Mm-hmm. Question to both of you, is this completely unrelated to what you're saying, or is it somehow something that fits in there?
No, it's a beautiful summary, Thomas.
It is. And the other aspect of this is that as we develop these senses, there's also a wider and wider capacity for awareness to hold all of that. And awareness, of course, is much faster than visualization is and is much faster than our mm-hmm. interior dialogue. It's much faster than the intellect, but it is not separated from it. So you can then tap into intuitive processes that are all over the body, using the awareness capacities that you develop. And of course, this can happen earlier or later in people's lives. So that's another area of development that I think is important for people to pay attention to.
So, say one word more about what do you mean with awareness capacity? How can I understand this?
Well,
the interoceptive neural networks grow up. And like I said, we have the myelin sheaths that make things move faster and faster. Once we do that, we get very quick at it. And this is where we move from thinking to awareness. Awareness is way faster than thought. And Terry's describing that process of what happens when the myelin sheath gets so efficient on an internal external integrated level that we move to another process that's faster than thought. We move to a process that is called awareness of there's a way of processing information. So a way to describe that is to imagine for a minute that you're in a room with a bunch of furniture and you can't visualize what the furniture will look like when it's in a certain place, but you have all this furniture to put in this room. Mm-hmm. So you have to actually put the furniture in the room before you can see whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. And then you have to move all this heavy furniture again to see if whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. But when you can visualize, you can just go, oh, this is going to look at here. This is going to look at there. This is the way it needs to go. And then you just put it in once and it works. Mm-hmm. So awareness does the same thing to thought as thought does to physically moving the furniture. It's the same type of speed. It's that much faster, that much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the seeds of awareness from a very, very young age, but awareness grows up and becomes mm-hmm. more and more robust. We would not want to say that a child does not have any awareness. They do. Of course mm-hmm. they do. They don't know that it's called that, of course. But mm-hmm. anyway, this what a delightful conversation with you, Thomas.
Yeah, I'm very sorry that we are at the end of the conversation. I feel we just started it, but I really very much appreciate the perspectives that both of you brought in. I also would like to mention your website where all your work is kind of described and where people can see where you're going with your work. It's called www.stagesinternational.com.
That's right.
Stagesinternational.com. Mm-hmm. And also for our German audience, you do have a seminar in Berlin coming up. Isn't that true?
Yes. Yeah.
That is coming up in May, and it's coming up with the Integral Academy in Germany. And I don't have the exact date right now, but when you go to the Integral Academy website in Germany, you will find the seminar in May. I think it's the beginning of May with Terry O'Fallon and Kim Barter in Berlin. Mm-hmm. So both of you, thank you very much for coming, and a good night here from Germany. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
What a delight.